Welcome to Meowcore, the podcast where I, Laura, show my cool friend Panya the music that I like.
Meow.
And that is mostly hard rock and heavy metal. There she is. How are you doing, Panya?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Computers are dumb. Jenna is trying to eat plastic, but the sun is shining and it's slowly warming back up.
Hmm. Yeah, spring is coming as we record. Spring is here. Nice.
It's definitely here because the temperature can't make up its mind what it wants to do.
Yeah.
And we have epic storms that roll in and out in a day. Literally, the other day, it rained like hell, like somebody had upturned some kind of bucket over the city. And an hour later, the sun was shining and there were no clouds. And 2 hours after that, it rained like hell.
Wow.
It's crazy.
It's never going to be boring this season, okay?
It's never boring in Nashville, okay? It's never boring here. The other thing that is going on in my city at this time is the CMA Fest. And this episode will come out well after CMA Fest is over, I'm sure. But at the moment, they're setting up for it. And since I work downtown, it's a humongous pain in the butt. I'm all for festivals and things, but having one in the downtown, not even just the tourist section, but like the business area too, of a major city is just a pain in the tail. It makes me feel for people in New York City around like New Year's. That must be a screaming disaster for them trying to move around.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Anyway, so what are we doing today?
We're doing not country. We are doing some Scooby-Doo chase music from Sweden. The band is called Ghost.
Scooby-Doo chase music.
Yeah, when they're chasing someone and just before they start revealing him.
Okay.
It was someone famous or a music journalist that said this, that they sounded like Scooby-Doo music. So
were they trying to be insulting or what?
They kind of, I don't know. I wouldn't have said it if I liked the music, and I do like the music. I find the music to be beautiful and impressive and ominous. I wouldn't say Scooby-Doo. They are a bit retro. Maybe it was the retro aspect that made him think that. And
well, there are really specific kind of elements to the sort of music that's played in those kinds of scenes. So I guess we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Tobias, who founded Ghost and then eventually turned out to be the big boss and songwriter and decision maker, said, I think during the third or second era of Ghost, the second album, that his purpose was to make Ghost sound like it was the band that you missed in the 70s.
Okay.
And then you get into Ghost and you find this whole world that he created, this whole mythology, the band that you missed. So I think they do manage to sound a bit old, a bit retro in a way. So.
Okay.
First album comes out in 2010, but we will listen to something from the second album. One of my favorites is called Monstrance Clock. We'll get it on Spotify.
Ooh. I wonder why he named it that. Because it sounds like it's derived from remonstrance, which is to scold somebody. But it also invokes the word monster, which is clearly on purpose.
Mm-hmm. But also,
I wonder if it has a separate meaning. I gotta go find that out. Before we listen to this, I need to go find out if monstrance has a separate meaning.
It does. It really is a sort of clock, but I can't remember what sort. Ornate display primarily by the Catholic Church.
Oh, it's a yeah. Okay, I see. It might be a reliquary. I see. Okay.
Mirror clock.
Then this might connect to a book I've been meaning to read for a while, which I'm unlikely to talk about here. It's not a fiction book. It's a very dense book.
Mm.
But it might be connected. I've got this book about solar observations in the church, and it's specifically linked to what the early Catholic Church had to do in order to determine the correct date of Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And because Easter's date is predicated on the spring equinox, they therefore needed to be able to do things to determine the exact moment of the equinox.
Yeah.
You know, these days we just go look it up and it's easy. But back then it was a lot more complicated and had to do with angles of lights and this and that. But that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, let's listen to a song about a little ritual.
Let's listen to a song about a ritual clock. All right. Let's listen to Monstrance Clock by Ghost. Well, I certainly have no idea where they're getting this Scooby-Doo nonsense from. I can definitely tell. I can hear the evocation of the 70s style music, and it's crossed up, obviously on purpose, with church hymnal or Christian church hymnal kind of things with the, mm-hmm. the organ.
Yeah.
And the, I think it might be key that I'm hearing. I don't know enough about music. Arg. I think it's in a minor key, or part of it is in a minor key.
Yeah.
And that's what gives it that effect.
Most of the music I listen to is in minor key.
Right.
I don't know what that means, but it is.
Yeah, I don't know what that means either. We've got to get an actual musician on here to explain these things to us.
Yeah.
Actually, that might be something that husband could do. Mm-hmm. I'll see if I can arrange an episode where he comes in and teaches us what these words mean.
Yeah.
So that we stop sounding quite so idiotic.
If he can also play us a few notes and say, this is minor key, and these few are major key,
That would be harder to record, and he has not taken the saxophone out of its case in the entire time I've known him. But he can certainly give us samples of songs.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I'll get that figured out. That's irrelevant. No, this was really cool.
Right.
This was really cool. And I bet they pissed off a whole bunch of people with the places their lyrics were going.
Yeah.
Because it's clearly intended to evoke particularly Catholic Christianity with the way that the sounds go. And the Monstrance Clock is a very specific to Catholic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yet here is this whole chorus and interlude in the song talking about the Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the eerie sound of the Monstrance Clock, which is not something that I think Catholics necessarily want associated with that particular item.
Ghost had a hard time recording one of these albums because they were recording in America. I can't remember if it was this album or the next one, but there were people locally who didn't want to record with them, and Christians who were protesting. Yeah. There has been reaction, of course. And Satan is very present, and the Antichrist is very present in their lyrics always.
It's like, I was talking about this with my boss, actually. A couple of days ago, we'd got done with the work-oriented things we needed to talk about and had just wandered into other discussion about why American Christians in particular are so repulsed by the idea of examining any other religion or culture than their own. Yeah, we eventually concluded that one of the major reasons was probably a fear of temptation. This idea that if you were exposed to these other ideas, you would somehow find them irresistible and become corrupted. That the mere exposure to the ideas would inevitably corrupt you somehow.
It's a religion that where thought crime exists, and where when they read the Old Testament, it's a jealous God. He says, "Do not even look at these other gods."
I feel like that's A, that, well, the first thing is that that collides really hard with the idea that humans have free will, which is this big thing that American Christians at least harp on quite a bit, is, oh, we have free will, we can choose. All right, yeah. If you can choose, then you can choose not to be corrupted by these other ideas. And of course, one of the responses of that is, well, my choice is I don't get corrupted because I don't look at them. All yeah. right, that's fair if you're doing that on purpose, as opposed to some kind of instinctive, revolted reaction that was trained into you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There is a difference between those two.
Free will is mostly used to excuse the existence of evil. God is not at fault. It's human free will that causes evil, and he cannot take it from us, because then we would be robots, and that is why God is not doing anything about the evil in the world.
That collides really hard with the idea that, if evil is caused by human free will, then that collides really hard with the idea that Satan can take you over and make you do things, which is pretty common currency in the southern states of America. Mm-hmm. It's not my fault. Satan made me do it. What happened to your free will?
Yeah. Ideas collide all the time. The religion doesn't make sense, and that's okay for them. I remember a time when it was okay for me. It didn't have to make sense. It was about faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we're getting into really complicated, deep things. This is Ghost's fault.
It is, yeah, and that's probably one of their goals when they write these
lyrics.
I was
thinking exactly the same thing, actually, that's probably on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost certainly on purpose. But I had a second point, and Buddy just ran off with it. Buddy? Oh, now you're going to be the plastic-eating goblin? Oh, no, you just wanted attention. All right.
No.
All right, I will scratch your butt. Yes. Wiggle that tail. Wiggle that tail, buddy. Boop. Booped his nose. You want to come up here and say meow? No, you don't say meow out loud?
No.
Come here. Well, why are you so heavy? Oh, why are you such a big fat boy? You used to say meow. What happened? Yeah, you used to say meow a lot. Now you're just staring at the microphone. No meow. All right, no meow. Well, oh, and it's shedding season. Picked him up. I pushed him into my face, and now I'm covered in fluff. Blah.
You must.
And there's fluff in my mouth. Blah.
Oh, no.
Now he says meow. 6 feet away from the microphone, he says meow. Ah, these cats.
He gave you hair instead. Cats. Instead of meow.
He did. I want to give it back. What was my other point?
How did we get to free will? From ghost to free will?
The reasons why Christians don't want to learn about other faiths or be confronted with other ideas.
And their bad reaction to ghosts in America. But, you know, just the extreme groups.
It isn't, though. That's the thing.
But I'm thinking...
The extreme groups do things in the sense of actively coming out against something, but there are people I have personally known that when presented with an idea, even in the form of a person, that runs counter to the way they think the world should be, they will just turn their back on that. It's not that they set out to change that person, and they won't go out and like raise placards or anything against the whatever it is. They just utterly cut it out of their life. You know, they find a friend, and then they find out that this person is not Christian or Mormon or Catholic, and they're not friends anymore. Just bam. Just that simple.
Uh-huh.
And if they're forced to interact with that person, they will do it in the most limited way possible and be as distant and unwilling to come to know that person as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this, and in some cases I think it's not that they consciously thought about it so much as they just have this instinct that's been trained into them that you can't be exposed to that.
Yeah.
This is what my boss and I were thinking, like, how do you ever understand someone if you're unwilling to know anything about them? If you insist on pulling away as soon as you learn something about them that goes against what you already know.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah. You ask them things like, have you ever met a trans person? Have you ever spoken to a trans person? And they probably haven't. And if someone is trans, they're not going to tell them, because that someone has already heard transphobic things from them. So you don't feel like talking to such a person. So you turn this into a vicious cycle where you say
where
shit.
They can't learn.
Yeah. The people who could teach you something just by existing around you will avoid you or will not talk to you.
And it's, you know, trans or gay is an obvious one, but I've had people do that to me, that when they found out I wasn't Christian, that was the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the end of the everything. Like, we were friends and then we weren't.
Yeah.
And I'm going, I don't understand what I did wrong. And the answer is, I didn't do anything wrong. My existence is an offense to them. And they can't be around someone who doesn't believe the same things that they believe. And some of them have been so... I've only encountered one person who was like this, but there was one person who was so trained so hard in this that even other groups of Christians were a problem for them.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't talk to Catholics. They couldn't talk to Mormons. They couldn't talk to people who weren't the right kind of Protestant.
Yeah.
Because it might corrupt them. But I would like to be corrupted. Let's have more ghosts.
Yeah. With pleasure. I like this one because it sounds great. It has this big chorus. And look at what's happening during this mass that they're having. They have this. They mm-hmm. have a pentagram that hypnotizes them. No, paralyzes them. And these horns of a ram that hypnotize them. And the assembly is swaying. It's and they've really come to a point where they're doing something as one. And of course, Papa, when at least Papa the Third, around the third album, when they sang this one live, he would explain that it was a song about the female orgasm. And he would, in his little funny tone, he would talk about how you can do things so that you will come together, but you have to make an effort. And yeah, but
okay. Unpack this Papa the Third thing for me. What's that about?
Every new album, not every EP. They do EPs sometimes with cover versions of other people's songs. But every new album, there is a new pope on the throne of this organization that they call the clergy. And the clergy consists of people who are in the shadows. We don't know who they are, except for the popes and a lady that we've come to know as Sister Imperator. She's this blonde woman, very ambitious to spread the cult. And so every new album has a new pope, Papa the First, and we listen to a song by Papa the Second, then etc. We have Papa the Fifth right now. Sorry, the Fourth. As far as I remember. And the mask changes and the costumes that the musicians wear change.
Okay.
Yeah.
So does that mean that do they also change the sound of the music in any way when the Pope changes?
No. I don't think they change style drastically.
Okay.
They just...
So it's just the presentation of the costumes, some of the staging.
Mm-hmm. The theater changes. So a little bit is added to the lore. And with the last two albums, they started making these videos where we would learn more about the first pope who is still alive, and the deaths of...
That's not usual.
The deaths of the Papa the First, Second, and Third, because they eliminated them for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Oh, dear.
And the new Cardinal, Cardinal Coppia, who later became Pope. We have these in little videos, official videos, with actors.
So it's a whole story. It's not just the music. There's this whole story.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. Okay. And the last song we see today is going to be a video, and you'll see a bit about the origins of Papa Zero. But
okay.
They revealed that with a later album, but we're still at the first album, so it's Monsters.
The fandom is insane.
Mm-hmm. And they call the concerts rituals, and people wear one of the Pope's makeup on their faces, and the girls dress as satanic nuns, which is just nuns.
Nuns in short skirts.
Yeah, and they have this thing called the crucifix, which is like a cross, but it's a G. It's kind of, the cross has a G on it. It looks like a G. You can buy a crucifix. You can buy all sorts of things to complete your nun, your sister outfit.
Okay.
It's great
fun.
Okay.
All right. So what's our next song?
Next one is going to be also from this album, but we will watch the next Pope performing it, Papa the Third.
Okay.
It's Gule and Zombie Queen acoustic on YouTube.
Okay, so let's listen to an acoustic version of Gule Zombie Queen. Had all these interesting things to say, and then he pulled out the kazoo again at the end, and I lost it all. All these interesting things, and then he pulled out the fucking kazoo.
How are we going to get them back?
We're not. We're gone. It's all gone. Kazoo ate it.
Dear listeners, there was going to be fascinating content, but...
And then there was a kazoo, and my entire brain shut down.
Yeah, but there was a kazoo at the start. Well, didn't you...
And it shut down for a couple of minutes. I didn't expect it to come back at the end, okay? That's what it was. Like, he played the kazoo at the start in the first minute or so, and then it went into this gorgeous evocation of flamenco with fascinating lyrics, and he was conducting, and I noticed that his eyes were odd, and was watching the guitar player's fingers, and that was cool, and then he pulled out the kazoo again, and everything went away.
Yes, okay, some of it came back. In it just resumed. Okay.
A little.
Summarized.
The kazoo! Okay, why? Why?
Because.
Why does he have his mouth painted that way? It makes it really hard to watch.
Yeah, and it looks like the mask is making his face movements a bit difficult, but he sounded nice. I don't know.
Well, he sounded just fine. It's just that I was noticing interesting things about the makeup that were evoking certain specific things. Yeah. I think it's grease paint he's using.
Yeah, probably. That's what they use for full
and if
face.
And if you move your face a whole lot with that, then it kind of breaks up.
And he has a mask on top of the paint. Because there's something on his lips and there's something around his eyes, but there's an actual mask on his face.
No, there can't be.
Why not? There was. Sometimes
because
he wore.
Watching, specifically thinking about that actually, and I was watching the way that the skin on his cheeks was moving when he was singing.
Oh, okay.
And you wouldn't be able to see that if he was wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
At most, if he's wearing a mask, it's like some kind of paper thing. Something like that.
There is something on his neck also, on the front of his neck, because he was 30. His neck didn't look like this, with these two creases at the front.
Okay.
So there was material on his
I'm
face.
I'm reasonably sure he's not actually wearing anything but heavy paint on his face.
Mm.
It's just that you're correct. It does change with the sockets of his eyes. He changes the paint style. But with his mouth, it's not that there's a change in the paint style. It's that he really specifically, and I had to stare at his lips, and that's creepy, for like 30 seconds before I figured why it looked the way it looked. And it looks that way because we're used to thinking of like lipstick and red lips as being the whole lip. And that's not at all what he did. There's this straight line that he's drawn. And so most of the full part of his lip in the front is white and thus almost invisible.
Yeah, that's true. And then on the
And
sides, there's a little pink.
it makes it look like he can't close his mouth completely, especially when he sings.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
really creepy to stop and think about it because it makes it look like his face is a little damaged. And then you fall into what he's singing and how he sounds because he's a really excellent singer, and you forget to pay attention to that.
And he's
But every time
wearing.
the camera would go back to do a close-up on his face, I'd have to look away because it's like, stop staring at me. I need to listen.
Yeah. He had this blue lens and.
Yeah, he had the blue-white lens in one eye, which made it look messed up.
At one point during that era, he had an eye infection and he wasn't wearing the lens. And so he would, and he, as he was recovering, he had these fancy sunglasses. So Papa was in sunglasses then. That was funny.
Okay. But were they all sparkly?
There was a little bit of decoration on the sides, but he didn't want to take away from the rest of the look.
Right. Okay.
And this uniform that he's wearing is a copy, a pretty close copy of the uniform worn by one of the Swedish kings. It's somewhere in the at the start or the middle of the 20th century.
Okay,
With
that's
this.
interesting. I mean, it's a military effect, and I was noticing something about the costuming that either the black coat piece, and the white shirt piece are one item,
Probably.
or the coat piece is sewn to the shirt. Because it wasn't moving the way I would have expected it to move as he was moving around, but it wasn't as fitted as, say, Regency era England clothing was,
Yeah. There is
which
room
would
to
have
move.
prevented it from moving. And also, it was a very nice black satin, and probably hot as hell. Oh man.
I don't know how he or the ghouls did during summer festivals, and even when it gets a little hotter in a concert hall, this must have been hard for
They
them.
drink all the water, that's what. I mean, as a theater person, you get used to that. The stage lights are always going to be blazingly hot. It's always going to be intensely hot. And almost invariably, the thing that you are doing is active enough to keep you warm as well, and that all stacks up. And then there's genuinely no getting around the fact that when you put hundreds, thousands of people in a single room, their body heat will warm that room up. It's one of the things that makes packing for big conventions really difficult. Like, Dragon Con occurs in Atlanta at the end of the summer, or the technical end of the summer, the end of August, the beginning of September. It's still really freaking hot down there. So you pack thinking, okay, I'm gonna wear shorts, I'm gonna wear short sleeve shirts, I'm gonna wear, tank tops and light skirts, and then you go inside the hotels and they've kicked up the AC so high, both to compensate for the heat outside and the fact that they're packing thousands of people into there, and you're like, oh man, where's my winter coat? Like, it's really hard to figure out how to pack for that. And so whenever I'm taking someone new to Dragon Con in particular, I will tell them, dress in layers. Dress in layers, wear your cute light tank top, and put a fun shirt over that, and then put like a windbreaker over that kind of thing. Particularly because it's Atlanta at the end of the summer, It is recommended to have a top layer that will serve as a rain jacket, because there will be unexpected outbreaks of rain. Mm-hmm. So you want that. But you can't do that when you're doing theater. Especially if you're on the stage, you have the costume. Mm-hmm. Although I guess that does explain why you get a lot of singers who start off, singers in particular, who start off in, you know, this lovely long sleeved outfit, yeah. And then by halfway through the show, they're like topless. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's like, no wonder they're not stripping because sexy. They're stripping because they're pouring with sweat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. And ghosts were concealing their identities and intended to continue concealing them after this third album, after this Papa. But...
Oh, you say that implying something happened.
Mm-hmm. So this album, the third one where this Papa is born, comes out in 2015. And in 2017, while they are touring that and promoting that still, for... former band members sue Tobias, saying that he didn't pay them what they deserved from the income of sales and world tours. And they went to court, and he won the case, and he was saying there was never agreement for them to be anything else than paid musicians. They were not contributing as songwriters.
Band.
Yeah, it was just his project all along.
Huh.
And that was when they filed that suit. That lawsuit was when we knew who was in the band. And people Googled pictures. Until then, only the Swedish fans who knew the local scene and kind of recognized this guy has these rings on his finger and this guy sounds like the guy from this band. Only mm-hmm. they knew.
And his hands look like this, mm-hmm. and his body shape is like this.
Mm-hmm. So 2017, we all knew what they looked like and who they were.
Mm-hmm. So have the band members, the musicians, changed since then?
They had changed until 2017 quite a lot, and they have been changing since then. Last year, he was touring with like 7 people on stage.
Wow.
Doing different things on stage. She's had ladies playing the drums, playing keyboards, playing bass. He's had boys. We know boys. There was a member who used to be in Opeth. We've identified many of these people already.
Huh.
But until then, it was this big, big secret.
Why is that? Is that... That seems to be a more common thing in metal, because wasn't there a great big thing several months ago about Sleep Token that also conceals mm-hmm. their identities, and someone was claiming to know who they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were already the people who knew who they are, but they weren't spreading the knowledge. And this one, this person was trying to dox them and post personal documents. This is what they say. There's no access to that post. The post has been deleted. I don't know.
Well, that's not what I'm thinking about anyway. What I'm thinking about is the idea of hiding mm-hmm. one's identity as a performer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And wondering... I'm wondering... I mean, I can think of one reason to do it that could be a very good reason. You know, if you want to be able to live your personal life privately and not be stopped mm-hmm. on the street for autographs and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And on the other hand, it does always, at least until the two identities are connected, it does always isolate you from a certain level of recognition, a certain type of recognition of your work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing quite like having your work recognized as in your own name.
Mm-hmm.
And then I suppose, in a way, the whole business sort of harks back to or connects to things like superhero secret identities.
Yeah. And they liked the concept of Kiss, for example. Kiss with these 4 characters with these masks who mm-hmm. never did interviews without the masks. And there was a time in the 90s when Kiss took off the makeup and did a whole thing. But then they came back to the makeup. But I don't know.
I bet that makes it interesting when it comes time to handle things like award shows, and not from the side of the band, but from the side of the people who are organizing this thing and trying to ensure that the right people get in. You know, if the identity is concealed,
I don't know.
And so much of our legal and financial system worldwide is predicated on guaranteeing that identity. You are who you say you are.
Mm-hmm.
So there must have been built in people who knew, not in the sense of fame, in the sense of business.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They won a Grammy in 2016 before they were made public. They won a Grammy for this 2015 album. It was great fun watching them on the red carpet, because the reporters on the red carpet tend to ask you about what you're wearing.
And they didn't know what to do with these boys, did they?
Wow.
They didn't know what to do with them at all, because not only do you not actually know who they really are and you cannot call them by name, but they're not dressed. Did they go in costume beyond the makeup and the mask?
They went as you just saw them in that SiriusXM performance.
Okay, so yeah, asking them who you're wearing is kind of irrelevant to those circumstances. Although I imagine whoever made those costumes would have loved to be discussed.
Mm-hmm. They didn't say
they
who
would
made
not.
Them. Yeah.
It would be unlikely for that to be some kind of famous name like Versace.
Mm-hmm. So, but the reporters were not ready for that. But we were very happy that...
No, I guess not!
We were very happy that Ghost got a Grammy. Yeah. And Tobias was That's in character fun. As they accepted it. It was fun.
I mean, if you're going to go to those lengths of concealment, then, yeah, just keep carrying it on through. Be the secret identity the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Just do it, you know. And I mean, I'm hearkening again back to the superhero thing, where, you know, when Superman gets an award for saving the city, he accepted as Superman, not Clark Kent.
That's right. That's what Papa does.
So it's the same thing here.
Yeah.
When Ghost gets an award for wonderful music, it's Papa who accepts it, not Tobias.
Mm-hmm. Papa and his ghouls.
Right.
So we'll stay in this album. Well, we're going to this album that won the Grammy, and we will play the first song that got me into Ghost. It was on Bulgarian radio. It's called Cerise, and it supposedly comes from a Greek word for church. Let's see it on Spotify.
Again, we're going to go be looking that up. We're going to go, because if they're going to make language plays, I want to know about it. Okay, because what it evokes from me, yeah. It does. But it's Byzantine Greek. Okay. But what it evokes for me, and I'm betting he did that on purpose, is it evokes the Greek mythological character Circe, the enchantress.
Ah, I don't know.
When I look at it, that's what I see, and then I have to go back, there's an extra I in there, that's a different word.
I don't know.
I wonder if the lyrics connect to that. The cover of this album is insane.
Yeah, it's the most beautiful,
like
intricate.
It's clear.
Thing.
Like, I'm not even looking at it. I've got this tiny image of it. It's not a large image, but it's insane, because there's clearly, I guess it's two papas or two figures standing on either side of a lit up altar. But if you pull back a little bit, what you see is a face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the whole out with a crown,
like a skull face.
That's crazy. That's an incredible bit of artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's listen. Pronounce it for me again.
Cerise.
Let's listen to Cerise by Ghost. Excuse me, that's a love song.
It's more about enchanting someone and enslaving them forever, but yeah.
I mean, love comes in many forms. I didn't say it was a healthy love song. Jeez.
Yeah. Well, as a former Christian, my first thought was Satan. Like Sabbath's NIB, my name is Lucifer, come take my hand, but a lot more beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I'm not hearing it the same way, but then my brain kept trying to connect it to Circe, which didn't work very well. But it's definitely a love song.
I guess.
It's absolutely a love song. It's just that, like a lot of... how do I put this? There's a lot of... In fandom, especially sci-fi fandom, that is similar. I can't English today. What the heck? Metal, in my mind, is partly connected as a fandom to science fiction and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And the trend in science fiction and fantasy fandom, especially as you edge away from the source material, to glorify unhealthy relationships.
Yeah.
I feel like this song is part of that in the sense that it is a romantic song, but it's not a healthy relationship it's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Did that come out clearly?
Yeah, yeah. I understand.
My tongue kept getting in the way.
Maybe my understanding is also influenced by the video, which was a little papa with his little ghouls. They were all played by children, but with the right masks, performing
right.
At a school, what do you call them? School talent show, where they just,
each
of them plays whatever their talent is. And the parents were pretty shocked when this music began. But there was one girl in the audience who loved this little papa, and she got up from her seat, and they were holding hands at one point of the performance. And then she started doing these witchy things. Whoever she didn't like, she made them fall to the floor.
Right.
So I'm thinking there's a performer or someone who's leading a ceremony enchanting a particular person in the audience. From now, our merge is eternal. You are not what they told you you are. Your soul is not tainted, but you are mine now.
So maybe the unhealthy relationship is a parasocial relationship.
Could be. Yeah.
Maybe that's the case. Of course, if that's what's happening in the video, then this song is absolutely intended to also evoke Circe from the Greek mythology, because she was an enchantress. She features most strongly in the Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
Kittens, what are you guys doing? Jana, stop trying to eat your brother. as she leaps right at him. He kicks her in the face. They're having a sumo wrestling match. I don't know what to say. But I can definitely see why you fell in love with this song. This is a great song.
Mm-hmm.
And compared to some of the other music that we've listened to, I feel like the balance of, like, the mix of this in a technical sense is really, really, really good. I don't feel like any of the instruments overwhelm each other. I don't feel like I'm losing any of the lyrics to a wall of sound.
Mm-hmm.
I can distinguish individual instruments.
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed before how there are times, especially in metal music, where it's just sound. You can't tell the individual instruments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel like this song was mixed really well with respect to that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think for me is one of the things that makes it better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came from a really nice sounding album.
Right.
And I'm
kind of glancing at some of the extra information on Spotify, because it likes to give you this information, and I'm looking at the credits, and one of the composers is a ghoul writer, which just goes back to what we were saying about how closely they are adhering to this secrecy.
Mm-hmm. Tobias would give interviews, not as Papa, but as a nameless ghoul, so he would just be wearing a mask like everybody else.
A ghoul mask.
A nameless ghoul is here to talk about ghost music. And he was like, oh, yeah, I love ABBA. Okay. Do you believe in Satan? Oh, well, not really. No, I don't worship him, but I like these ideas of rebellion and freedom.
Although that's actually quite clever that if all the ghouls wear the same kind of mask, then that enables him at points to say things about the band's music that would be taken differently if they came from the front man. That he can become just a member of the band insofar as there's any just, and be able to say things and comment on the music and what's coming up in a way that the front man maybe couldn't do. That's fascinating.
The front man
Jana.
was a big clown. Papa was a funny boy. Grandiose, but funny. Okay.
There they go.
And then I'm gonna stay on this album.
And then what happened?
I got three songs from this album because it's my
Oh
favorite.
wow. You really liked it. But when me. Fine.
What?
I know that we're doing this and it's music that Laura likes. It's just that occasionally it's like, but give me the newer stuff. But we'll get there. I can go find it on my own. The Meowsters can go find it on their own. We are not constrained to what Laura shows us.
That's right. The last song we will listen to is one of the newer stuff. The newer stuff is more merry, it's a bit lighter, it's not as doomy as it used to be. So naturally, it doesn't attract me that much. It's more musical, I guess. And this
You would
old stuff
enjoy
is
the
more
end of the
Satan.
world, Laura.
Yeah, thank you.
That's not a compliment.
But as you said,
That's not a
but as you said, this was really well mixed. So we'll stay in this pristine album that I love,
Okay.
and we'll listen to Absolution on Spotify.
Okay. Let's listen to Absolution by Ghost. Hang on, I need to play that again and again and again and again and again and again and again.
Nice, right? So much
That was really a
piano
good one.
and another different keyboard in the middle.
Oh, I liked that so much. Where can I fit that into my regular rotation? The problem is my regular rotation has gotten so huge, I hear any given song about once a week.
So just do whatever you want. Why do you have a regular rotation? If you feel
Okay,
like
so what
Ghost
I really
today.
mean by that is I have a playlist that whenever I'm driving somewhere or I'm sitting at work or I'm riding the train, I just put on that playlist and it's all my favorite songs. But I have so many favorite songs now that I hear any given song maybe once a week. That's what I mean by regular rotation.
I see. It's a bit like a musical, right? Like a piece from a musical.
It is. But
But
I've noticed, we've discussed this before, a lot of metal songs are more like that. They are more, I don't want to say more dramatic because I feel like that's not entirely accurate, but there is the way that the music flows, the structure of the music. I don't want to say I liked it better than the previous one. I liked it the same but for different reasons. And I enjoy songs, we've talked about this before. I enjoy songs that I can sing, but I feel like a lot of the Ghost songs, I probably couldn't sing them very well, but I like the non-singer parts really well. I like the guitars and the pianos and the keyboards. I like what they do with that really well.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you be able to sing them? Too high or too low?
I don't find the. I don't want to say that this is something I don't like about the music, but it does change its singability for me. A lot of Ghost songs seem to be somewhat repetitive as far as the content of the lyrics go. And in terms of the whole structure of the song, it works really well. But in terms of singing it, like to myself when I'm driving or whatever, I'm less likely to sing songs that I find the lyrics to be repetitions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't know what the lyrics were about, really. Someone looking for things to improve in their life, looking for absolution.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I probably wouldn't sing it very much. I don't find that these lyrics have a lot to say to me.
Mm-hmm.
See if I can find them.
All those things that you desire, you will find within the fire. Maybe it's an invitation from a dark figure again. Join the dark arts.
No. Maybe what I'm seeing in this is it sounds like a song being sung to a person who is caught between wanting to become, to achieve something really specific.
Mm-hmm.
Hysterically seeking out what needs improving. Trying to be the chosen one. They're caught between that drive, that desire, and the struggle that it is to actually achieve that, and the way that you can lose things, important parts of yourself, if that's your focus. And so you are asking to be absolved of the need to improve, of this overwhelming sort of desperate drive to improve or be a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It may not be that clear cut. I have no idea what I'm saying.
Yeah, it is nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. And now I have to play you the ballad, you know, the soft ones.
Always a ballad, right?
That really uplift you. Listen to a ballad to, I don't know if it's Satan or the Antichrist or the leader of our church, our clergy.
Who cares?
But let's listen to He Is.
Okay. Let's listen to He Is by Ghost. What is he? Suspicious.
The shining and the light, and the force that made me be.
I'm not sure I think of that as a ballad.
A hymn, maybe? A praise,
I don't know.
Praise and worship song.
Certainly a praise and worship song, but yeah. In the context of ballads, the way that I usually, it's more... It is more intense than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's more metal, more intense than even what I usually think of as metal ballads.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely, clearly, deliberately evokes the rising intensity of praise songs. Mm-hmm. It's definitely that.
Yeah. And actually praising him, saying all these good things about him. Mm-hmm. And then what you get when you praise him is you fall into a precipice. You fall into the abyss, into the void.
Hey, but when you look at the void, does it meow back?
We just don't want to go to heaven, because heaven is like where this nasty God is, right? We'll go the other way.
Oh, well. Heaven is full and hell is boring. I'm quoting somebody else's song, but I don't know what it is right now.
Heaven is full and hell is boring. Wasn't it the other way around? I don't know the song.
I'm not sure.
But you see how elegant and how warm these guitars are. And that the solo kind of followed the first riff, but it was a bit more epic.
The guitar was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably the second song that I got into. And then I listened to the whole album and fell for them. Just like James Hetfield. James from Metallica was a Ghost fan since their first album. So of course everyone was like, I'm going to check out the band that is on James's t-shirt.
Okay.
He said they were a breath of fresh air for metal.
Not really sure why that's a thing, but okay.
Wet.
Whenever someone does something different in a genre, it's described as a breath of fresh air or something like that, with the corollary implication that whatever was going on before was boring and dull and uninteresting. And I feel like that's kind of insulting.
Particularly
because quite frequently every new group is described that way. And so what? Until something new comes along, they all have become boring, or there's a fresh new thing until something else new comes along? Like that's not a great way to look at things, I feel. It's awkward and weird.
Maybe. And then there was all these other people in metal who were, like, you know, the gatekeepers, who will to this day tell you, Ghost is not metal. Okay. Maybe it's hard rock. Maybe it is metal, but not the metal that you like. Chill, man. And that of course, gave me goosebumps in 2017, 2018, because I was still recovering from my Christianity. Like, who am I praising now? Am I going to hell? But I can't stay away from this music.
What am I going to do?
Then that was exposure therapy. Thank you, Ghost.
Okay.
And let's go to a song from the next album, as far as I remember. We'll watch the video on YouTube, and you will see the story of the initiation of the first pope, Papa Nihil, Papa Zero.
Okay.
He went to a party and he met Sister Imperator, and she baptized
him.
Kind of stole him, yeah. And then he knew he was a new man and he knew what his mission was. So let's watch this video for Danse Macabre. See? See how he got the blue eye?
that's the eye he sees the mystical with.
Yeah, probably.
He sees the non-real with that eye.
Mm-hmm.
What did I just watch?
Nice party, right? You want to go to a party?
No.
Like that? Okay.
No. Setting aside anything to do with the pan figure showing up or any of that, that is absolutely not the kind of party I am interested in, because there's too much drinking and too much expectation of looking a certain way, and no, screw that.
Okay.
That's not my kind of party. That's an extrovert's party, and forget it.
Uh-huh. None of that Anton LaVey shit.
Yeah, no. I'm fine with the Anton LaVey shit. It's the... I want to make a very important and very specific distinction here. It has nothing to do with the pseudo-satanic overview. It has nothing to do with the black outfits. It has nothing to do even with the drinking. It has to do with the artificiality, from my perspective, of the interactions of the people as a whole. They could have been wearing beautiful glittering dresses and pale makeup, and you know, it could have been an evocation of the light, it could have been, and I still would not have been interested. There was too much of I'm going to drape my long, elegant, sexy legs everywhere, and everyone was thin and everyone was pretty and no one was reading. And all of them were drinking and laughing and chattering, and it was artificial as hell from my perspective, and no, just no.
It's, okay, because it was in L.A., I guess? It was a party of the thin and famous? I don't know.
I really don't think that the location it was purportedly set in has a whole lot to do with that. There's just... the person that brought him to the party whom I think might have died in the end. He was certainly being devoured.
Mm-hmm.
The way that he was speaking and the way that he reacted when they finally got in represents a kind of person that I don't like. Jonna, stop eating the cardboard. Excuse me. Miss. That. They are the sort of people for whom life is not worth living if they aren't going out to a party and drinking and chattering loudly and being gossiped about.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about their life is about how they're seen. You have to be invited to the parties or be welcomed into the parties. If you're not at a party, life is miserable and boring, or you're out at a bar generating a party.
Mm-hmm.
It literally makes me want to gag.
I see.
Thinking about that kind of thing. It's hideous from my perspective. And I'm sure that there are probably meowsters for whom that's a thing. And I'm sorry to sound so critical of what you enjoy. It's just really not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really not for me. And I would never go to a party like that.
Okay.
Not on purpose.
Not taking you to that kind of party. And then you,
no.
Yeah, you're right. If no one's reading, you would be a bit of a vain gathering.
But if you look at, if you're just watching something like that, we have, it's not given in the video to know what they were talking about. We don't know what those people were talking about. They might have been talking about important things.
Mm-hmm.
They might have been discussing politics or whatever, because those kinds of things can happen at parties like that. But the drinking and the clothing and the... I still would not have ended up in a place like that. I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. But he got initiated, and there we go.
He did. And it was fascinating. He was wearing black, she was wearing black, and then they got baptized and they were wearing white.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got bled on and they were wearing red. And
well,
I liked that symbology.
Their clothes were red when the blood was raining on them? I forgot that.
It dyed them. It stained mm-hmm. them.
Yeah, true.
That's what happened. Miss Jonna! Quit that! We're not going to need to do a cat discussion for this episode because Miss Jonna has just... determined that it's just going to be interspersed with everything else. Young lady, but this half-ass I'm going to eat the bag is unacceptable.
No.
Now I've got big green kitten eyes. Like, what do you mean no, Mom? Oh, now I have her attention. It's also true, thinking about it, that it looked like our main character was also uncomfortable at that kind of party until the sister really connected with him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that is a thing that I found. I feel like the undertones of that, not the overtones of being baptized and so forth, but the undertones of that, of picking out the person who is shy and unfamiliar with that kind of scene and turning them into a star of the scene, is a very common theme in a lot of teen movies.
Hmm.
That a person who is a leader in the scene is challenged, frequently challenged to, you know, well, I bet you can't take that person and make them amazing. And, you know, usually in the movie, all you have to do is take the girl's glasses off and put a little makeup on her.
And then she's beautiful.
Just, frankly, deeply insulting.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a different discussion. But I did feel like the way that Sister Imperator handled it was very evocative of that.
Mm-hmm.
That here is this person who is an outcast, who doesn't quite belong, and I'm going to take you and shape you into something that does belong, and by the way, you're going to lose a whole bunch of what made you who you were in the process.
Mm. And at the same time,
another one of those things they never really talk about in those movies.
Maybe there were good things in your personality that, yeah.
Well, and this is one of the reasons why I don't tend to care for that kind of party and the sorts of person who's focused on those kinds of parties is this. If you were constantly going to these kinds of parties and drinking and doing whatever else, drugs, presumably, you're not doing anything else. You're not making pottery. You're not writing poetry. You're not making music. You're not doing science experiments.
Mm-hmm.
You're not anything else that was part of who you were is buried under the need to go to these parties and see and be seen.
And be cool.
And it becomes everything that you are.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it is still a mysterious organization, but from what we see, it looks like...
Because I don't think not all of the people at that party were anything more than peripherals to it.
Yeah, but there was a small group that was part of the initiation.
Right, and there were almost certainly folk elsewhere at the party that had no idea that this being with horns had shown up, that had no idea that there was an initiation elsewhere, that had no idea that there was this cluster of people belonging to a particular cult that were using the party to recruit.
And with all these popes supposedly at the helm, usually acting like funny, soft men with their weaknesses, there is a woman at the base and at the center of the organization driving it forward.
Person pulling the strings from behind the curtain, controlling it.
And that's a gal. And she's still around in their newer videos, these dramatizations that they make of what the popes are talking about to each other and what they're discussing with her. She is still like a mother to all of them, slightly infantile, funny popes.
If they're talking to each other and talking to her, then that implies that while she may have a lot of the control, she's not in sole control. She's not puppeting them.
No. They agree on the ideology.
That there's a mutual element to this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a female controlled organization entirely.
Yeah.
It was also interesting to watch that and listen to it because almost all of it, from both the kinds of dancing that specifically the troupe was doing to the way the music sounded, was very 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The troupe was dancing, and their outfits too, it reminded me of Jane Fonda kind of dancing.
I think it's supposed to. Also supposed to remind you a little bit of Flashdance.
Yeah. With these bathing suits in black.
And leotards.
Yeah. I thought of them as bathing suits for some reason.
No, they're leotards. It also makes me think of the 80s aerobics videos.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the sort of thing the women always would wear.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing missing was the poofy, curly hair.
Yeah.
That's okay. We don't need to bring that back. No. I promise.
Yeah. So,
like that one a lot.
And he was saying it wasn't I want to be with you. He was saying I want to be with you in the moonlight. And I got that on the third listen. In ancient rite. I want to be with you in ancient rite. Yeah. You saw Papa Nihil. There is an older actor that plays him in the newer videos. And
she put the makeup on him as a seal.
Mm-hmm. And gave him the sight.
And then she kissed the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were drenched in the blood of the sacrifices.
Mm-hmm. Cleansed and then dirtied again. Nice.
I guess, if you think of blood as being dirty.
Yeah, because they were in white and now they're stained. Yeah, so you guys and Panya, go explore Ghost. There's a lot of funny shit. Another favorite of mine is...
Aside from the frickin' kazoo.
Yeah. Another favorite of mine is Kiss the Go-Goat. Hey, baby, kiss the goat. It's great.
Now Jenna is trying to eat me. Oh. Young lady, you are almost two. When are you going to grow up?
Mm.
She says she is not going to grow up.
No, obviously not.
Long kitten is long.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Will you come here and say meow? No, I'm not allowed to pick you up.
Mm-mm.
No. You may not touch me. How dare. Boing, boing, boing. Are you sure you don't want to come up here and say meow? No, you just want to make stupid tongue faces at me. What is wrong with you? Oh, it's Papa's fault? Which Papa? Papa Pope or the Papa in this house? Oh, the Papa in this house. I see. Well, why don't you go pester him then? Oh, he's hunting bugs? All right. The husband has discovered the game Helldivers 2 and is absolutely obsessed with it. Which is fine. I'm good with that. He sends me funny videos.
And it's about hunting bugs? Are they like big mutated bugs?
Yes, actually. Mm.
Let me see. Are they demonic bugs?
No. At least not as far as we know. Honestly, the best way to understand Helldivers 2 is to recognize and accept that it is functionally a video game version of Starship Troopers.
Mm-hmm.
By Robert Heinlein. That the Earth, which is now known as Super Earth, do not ask me why, has spread out into the galaxy and has become a semi-totalitarian society that nevertheless refers to its government type as managed democracy.
Mm.
I don't know that they've done a lot of deep dives or explanation or thought on what exactly that means. It's not really relevant to the game.
Mm.
But it certainly involves a lot of parading around in fancy uniforms and not really bothering to trace the propaganda, and a lot of propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, what base story you are given boils down to humanity used to farm these bugs for rocket fuel. Don't ask me how that works. But the bugs have evolved and gotten smarter and are bloody huge and have now decided to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And so the titular Helldivers, which is a continuously changing group of fighters trained with fancy special guns on fancy special starships, must go down to the planets wherein the bugs were being farmed and take back the planets.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, there are these, there's this robot society whom Super Earth has decided are bad and must be defeated, but incidentally, they were actually existing quite peacefully on their home planet until Super Earth invaded.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to go fight them too. And there's no point, there's no part of this game that you are supposed to take seriously. It is absolutely accurate as a player, as an observer, to look at the Helldivers and go, are we the baddies? Because yeah, you really kind of are. But in terms of gameplay cycle, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You typically form a team of up to four and fight these, and the AI of the bugs or the automatons are, it's pretty good. You know, they'll stalk you and they'll hunt you, and you can tune the difficulty up and down and get different weapons and call down orbital strikes and things. So
mm-hmm.
In terms of basic gameplay, it's apparently pretty good. It's formed a crossover fandom with a game that I refer to as Dwarf Survivor, Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, which is You are a single dwarf sent down into the depths of this planet to mine minerals. And oh, by the way, the native life of this planet doesn't like you very much. And it's also bugs. So while you're mining the minerals, you must fight off these waves of bugs with your ever-increasing arsenal. Yeah, and you can see, since you're fighting bugs, that's where the crossover fandom comes from. You know, the dwarves are underground hell divers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's gotten a bit silly.
Mm-hmm.
But he's enjoying himself immensely, and that's what's pretty important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that the game developers and publisher have explicitly straight up come out and stated, you know, this is not intended to be any kind of serious take on any sort of political setup. This is a game. Don't take it seriously. And yeah. I appreciate that. And as far as I know, I haven't done any deep digging into this, but as far as I know, there's no kind of like gender divide amongst the Helldivers inside the game. Mm-hmm. Like you can choose the voice and it can be male or female or whichever you like, and all the Helldivers wear helmets. Mm-hmm. So you can't, you know, you don't even, it's not the sort of game where you decide what your character looks like. You pick out their armor and maybe the design of their helmet, but there's no argument about masculine versus feminine features or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I honestly kind of appreciate.
I just googled Starship Troopers. That's a thing I've never seen. But people mention it often when they talk about propaganda.
Yes, I do not recommend really watching any of the movies that were made of it. The original novel was written by Robert Heinlein, and as such features a lot of what is standard in his books. Heinlein is probably the poster child for using his books to present the ideas he had as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that you will find frequently across all of his books, although it does not appear in Starship Troopers, is the idea of polyamory. He was, for all that Starship Troopers is in many ways lauding the military, for the most part Heinlein would be considered incredibly liberal today.
Mm-hmm.
Is
there polyamory in the movies? Probably not.
I don't think they've ever made a movie of any of his works except Starship Troopers.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a movie of any other of his works, it's likely to be Stranger in a Strange Land, and I don't believe they have done. I would have to go look.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's see what I can find.
But was there polyamory in the book Starship Troopers?
No, but that's largely because Starship Troopers features no romantic associations whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
There is zero anything. A lot of Starship Troopers is really quite simplistic compared to the sophistication of some of his other works.
Mm-hmm.
But in some ways, oh, I'm completely incorrect. They made movies about a number of his other books. Well, there we go. He was a fairly prolific writer. So there's a lot of things that he wrote, a lot of short stories. Frequently his books are grouped into two major periods, we'll say. There was the period of young adult novels, which does include Starship Troopers, I believe, as far as timeline goes. But they tend to be, I don't want to say less sophisticated, but differently presented in the way that his specific ideas were presented. He is regarded as one of the establishing authors of science fiction, particularly harder science fiction, along with Isaac Asimov and Arthur Clarke.
Why didn't my mom have his books?
She may have done, and you may not have paid attention to that.
Hmm.
He is, for all that, he is one of the big three. If people talk about him at all, it's frequently one of maybe three or four books.
Mm-hmm.
For all that he wrote so many, there are so few of them that are honestly really, really well known. Starship Troopers is one, Stranger in a Strange Land is one, and frequently, if anybody knows of a third one, it's The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote many, many, many other books. From Farnham's Freehold to For Us the Living. Let's see, there's just so many. There's so many. Friday, The Number of the Beast, To Sail Beyond the Sunset. He was genuinely an enormously prolific writer.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, there are very common elements throughout almost all of his work, including a strong concept of what was at the time, I think, referred to as free love, which had to do with the idea that marriage in and of itself should have nothing to do with either government or religion, that it should be a contract between two or more people, a commitment between two or more people that upon agreement could be dissolved, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that the government, neither government nor religion, should have any real involvement with it. He also felt very strongly about, how do I put this? About the right of persons to be able to possess guns and defend themselves without government let or hindrance. He felt fairly strongly shifting to much greater strength over the course of his life regarding, in general, the idea of government being a non-interfering thing. That government should exist for certain specific and sharply limited reasons, and that interference in persons' private lives was not the domain of the government in any way. He tended to be quite focused on space travel. He also tended to be quite focused on the idea of a specific kind of altruism.
Hmm.
The idea that if you had something good, if something happened to you that was quite good, that gave you lots of money or you had extra or something, that being a good human being meant sharing that, meant paying it forward.
That's communism. No sharing.
It was the way that he phrased it made it ideologically distinct enough from communism to keep him out of trouble, I guess is the best way of putting it.
Okay.
But he was very liberal and he was somewhat socialist.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably fair to say that Stranger in a Strange Land is one of the most socialist of all his books, but that's not the only book in which those ideas appear. It's far from the only book in which those ideas appear.
Mm-hmm.
A great many of his books deal with, in a subtle way, the conflict between cynicism and idealism, and how those two characteristics can appear in the same person, and how those two characteristics can, the conflict between those two characteristics can drive elements. He is also the, I don't want to say originator, but there's a phrase that commonly shows up among older science fiction fans. It's Tanstaffel. There's no such thing as a free lunch.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And it is the concept that there, somewhere along the line, always someone's going to pay for things. anything, everything, whatever. There's no such thing as true free. Mm-hmm. Anytime someone offers you something and says that it's free, it's going to cost someone something somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of, is that cost going to end up on you or someone else?
Mm-hmm.
Believe that there's no such thing as a free lunch tends to crop up more often in his works that involve the combat between colonization out into space, particularly of the socialism. I think it appears in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, but it's been a very long time since I read that.
Mm-hmm.
The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, as I recall, specifically its plot revolves around a colony on the moon that chooses to rebel. And the results of that, and many of the results of that, are far more realistic and far more deeply considered than even a lot of modern sci-fi, up to and including the fact that the colony on the moon, if it is cut off from the Earth, has no way to refresh its air. And the fact of that becomes a significant element in the way that the moon colonists respond to things, including a significant element of the kind of society they try to set up. Which, again, that book addresses that conflict between idealism and cynicism. If you live in a space such as a moon colony where the most important elements of life, from air to water to food, cannot be manufactured on site, must be imported from what even then was an unimaginably far distance, you must be cynical in the way that you deal with people who interfere with those things. You cannot afford to be lenient on those people. And yet, idealism would indicate that people are generally good. And this is a conflict that shows up fairly often in a lot of his works, although it can be more subtle in some works than others.
I wonder if I need to have more idealism in my thinking.
It's possible. I couldn't say.
I might need some. Because cynicism is pessimism to some degree, and for me it's also just experience, a whole lot of bad experience.
Right.
But then you have to have a little faith and a little optimism to move forward.
Yeah. I think you may feel that you are too cynical. I sometimes feel that I'm too much of an idealist.
Mm.
And then I become unpleasantly surprised and upset when I am reminded just how deliberately horrible people can be to each other. I find that to be very upsetting and very frustrating, because it kind of flies in the face of something I've tried to keep centered as a core belief, that people are, in fact, generally good people. I had a spectacular argument several months ago at a science fiction convention regarding the Israel-Hamas conflict that functionally the core of the argument centered around the fact that I held this idea that people were generally good, and a number of the folk I was arguing with were on the more cynical side of the spectrum. And of course, when it comes right down to it, there's not a whole lot of resolution between those two ideas. It is very possible to agree to disagree and live peacefully with when you have two people who have those sort of opposing ideals. But you have to consciously choose to do that. And ultimately, the resolution of that argument was we agreed to stop trying to persuade each other and regretted elements of the argument that became more personal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is about as good of an outcome of that as you can hope for, although me being the kind of person I am, I spent the next 2 days being very twitchy and expecting to have my opinion held against me when nobody was bothering to do that. They were perfectly fine to attempt to persuade me, and they were perfectly fine to accept that I did not wish to be persuaded and carry on being friends.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is a thing that, honestly, in many ways, harkens back to the way that early science fiction was written. Heinlein used that, the ability to agree to disagree with someone based on, it's not always possible to do that, but in some cases it is possible, and in fact having persons of different outlooks in that way can be very important and very useful,
yeah,
both in telling a story and in real life.
Mm-hmm.
A number of his works centered around setting up a new colony somewhere and what kinds of people would be involved in that and how those different kinds of people would influence the ultimate outcome of the colony. That it mattered what kinds of people you sent out, and if you established a colony that was full of rugged individualists such as Teddy Roosevelt, then you would have a colony that was functionally screamingly libertarian and probably was not going to do well at forming anything more than a coalition of interest with any other colony. However, such a colony was also extremely unlikely to become militarily adventurous.
Mm-hmm.
And once they had established control over the things that they absolutely needed for survival, that rugged individualism would kick back in and they would say, okay, we've got what we need, we don't need any more, go away and leave us alone.
Mm.
You know, whereas if you establish a colony with more communist or socialist concepts, then the colony was likely to turn out a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's to read Heinlein's works is to have an extremely interesting and unusual perspective on the evolution of particularly liberal thoughts throughout most of the arc of last century in the United States. He published his first story in 1939. And I believe the last one was published in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm. And he died in 88.
Right. A final, partially, a final novel that was partially written by him and partially written by Spider Robinson called Variable Star was published in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been some re-releases of Podcane of Mars and Stranger in a Strange Land owing to information found amongst his papers after his death. Apparently there were versions of those two in particular that were published with endings that he did not entirely agree with, or that were shortened or edited differently in ways that he didn't entirely approve of.
Hmm. I'm not even finding many Heinlein books translated into Bulgarian.
The they Moon, may not.
Stranger in a Strange Land, Starship Troopers, yes, Waldo. And then that's it. Was he too inconvenient for the communist regime, which is when my mom was buying her books?
That is almost certainly accurate. It is probably also true that it's probably also true that in many ways a lot of the sociological characteristics of his books could be perceived as very American, and so there may have been concern that they would not translate well, both in a linguistic sense or a cultural sense.
Yeah.
And even if they did, there may have been concern that they would not sell well, and so it would not be possible to recoup the money spent on translating.
Mm-hmm. And anything reaching your way of life back then was not welcome. Imperialist America, the West.
Yes, and it is absolutely impossible in reading any of Heinlein's works to get away from knowing what he thought about certain things. He is one of the most skilled writers I've read at presenting it in the characters' mouths and in their actions, as opposed to just long paragraphs of this is the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still true that you will have your nose rubbed in what he believed. You will come to know what he thought about certain things and what he thought were good behaviors and bad behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, this is a characteristic of a great deal of particularly harder science fiction writing. It is much more likely in any kind of harder science fiction writing from Heinlein all the way to now to be able to read the books and figure out the author thinks this is a good thing. The author prefers this type of government. That wasn't the author I intended to give you today, but it worked out so perfectly that I'm just going to stick with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly do recommend reading Heinlein to get a good idea of what the roots of modern science fiction are, especially hard science fiction. Recommending him in that sense is by no means intended to take away from the fact that Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is probably the first science fiction fantasy novel ever.
Mm-hmm.
But the shape that modern science fiction takes today absolutely owes a great deal to Heinlein and Clarke and Asimov.
Mm-hmm.
And of the three of them, Heinlein's works have the most sociological information in them, the most cultural, the most sociological kind of work, as opposed to dudes with guns and spaceships. There are dudes with guns and spaceships in his work, don't get me wrong, but he spent a lot of time focusing on sociocultural things in a way that Asimov and Clarke didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Asimov and Clarke also tended, Clarke in particular, tended to take a more wider frame view of sociological things, whereas Heinlein's tended to be much more up close and personal, and you would learn these things not from a distant psychohistory kind of perspective, but from a I'm looking through the eyes of someone who's experiencing this kind of perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the driving elements of Stranger in a Strange Land, that here is this being who looks human, but he was not raised in any Earth human culture and has no idea what's going on. And no understanding, and brings his own set of ideas that are wildly different from anything that the cultures he encounters have any way of grasping.
He is human in nature, but he was not raised on in human culture.
I believe the story goes that he was raised on Mars,
mm-hmm.
by Martians,
mm-hmm.
who are not human. Yes, John, I'm Mert. I agree. But it's also important, if you're going to choose to read Heinlein, don't limit yourself to just one of his writing periods. Explore the entire 60-plus year sweep of what he wrote. Hungry now.
You?
It's time to stop. I'm hungry.
Yeah. So, guys, cut. We are hungry. That is all from us. That's all from us today. We hope you enjoyed it. And drink water and take your pills and eat some nice food.
Right. Remember to take care of yourself and grow your hair as long as you like and listen to as much heavy metal and read hard science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And we will talk to you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Meowsters.